Heart takes, not hot takes. This is Everyone is Wrong, a counterintuitive pop culture podcast. I'm your host, Seth Sommerfeld. Thanks for listening. My guest today is a true man's man, Michael, that is, knows how to use a computer, and to my knowledge, doesn't blatantly sleep with his best friend's sisters. He has shorted his own stock and broken the firewall into the podcast once again, and this time we'll be defending Michael Mann's 2015 cyber thriller starring Chris Hemsworth, Black Hat. Everyone is wrong, but Jason Baxter isn't. Thanks for coming on again, Jason.
Of course, it's always a pleasure to be on and a pleasure to see you. And I have to ask, does this make me the reigning champ for most appearances?
Oh, you were already easily the most
appearances? Okay, well, I just want to keep the title.
I think this idea sprung up because Ferrari recently came out and we were looking to do a Michael Mann thing and we got a little delayed. But you know what? It's always Michael Mann time in Jason's world.
That's true. And we'll get to it. But Black Hat, still relevant.
Okay. So let's get into the background of Black Hat. Black Hat is a 2015 hacker action film starring Chris Hemsworth, Tang Hui, Viola Davis, and Wang Lihorn. The film kicks off with mysterious hackers causing a meltdown at a nuclear power plant in China and also hacking into the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. The Chinese and U.S. government decide to uneasily put aside their tensions and work together to try and figure out who the hacker is and whatever the hell their goal is. The Chinese send PLA Captain Chen Dihua, played by Wang Lihorn, to work with an FBI team led by Viola Davis's special agent Carol Barnett. Dui brings his networking engineer Sister Lin, played by Tang Hui, onto the case and then reveals that the code behind both hacks is actually based on a code he and his old MIT roommate Nicholas Hathaway, played by Christopher Hemsworth, wrote when they were college students. Hathaway is currently in prison for hacking into banks, but Dewey convinces the FBI that they actually need him to catch this mysterious hacker. So a bargain is struck where Hathaway's sentence will be commuted if he solves the case, though he will also have to wear an ankle bracelet and be monitored by Holt McCallany's deputy U.S. Marshal Jessup. The adventure unfolds from there with lots of hacking, chases, and gunfire. The plot is kind of sometimes not totally the point, so it's hard to like go deeper because it's reveals that happen very late also. But yeah, that's the gist of Black Hat. Black Hat was released on January 16th, 2015, and was a box office and critical flop, only making $19.7 million at the box office against a $70 million budget. Adjusted for inflation, it's the lowest grossing Michael Mann film in the U.S. And before we get into sort of the critical reception, what's your personal relation to Black Hat, Jason?
Sure. I saw it, I want to say opening weekend. There was very few people in the theater.
Checks out.
Yeah. And I walked out absolutely ecstatic. It was exactly what I kind of wanted it to be. And I think already there was kind of like a bit of a sour word of mouth percolating around the movie. But, you know, I'm a dyed-in-the-wool Michael Mann fan, and it really played the hits as far as his kind of whole gist goes.
Right.
So I dug it, and I've only come to appreciate it more, and I'm sure you're going to talk about the different cuts of the film. But yeah, it's evolved since its initial release, and I think as well, perception of it critically has been reassessed.
Mm-hmm. And for me, I saw it for the pod, like many of these movies, and I don't think it's nearly as bad as like some of the criticism is, but I also, it's an incredibly challenging movie in a lot of ways, especially for like an action movie, and we'll sort of get into that. But I understand sort of like reasons why people would like cringe against this. But let's get into the critical reception. Black Hat sits at 33% among critics on Rotten Tomatoes, 35% among top critics, and has an even lower audience score of 24%. So the few people that did see this movie did not respond well to it. Here are some of the critical takes. The Guardian's Jonathan Romney wrote, "This is a square-jawed, furrow-browed, altogether joyless film with a hero to match. There are few sights in recent cinema more self-importantly unpleasant than a dour Hemsworth striding in slow-mo through crowds in Jakarta, slapping away pesky Indonesians who get in his way.
Jesus.
Another Guardian review by Jordan Hoffman said, if Hemsworth would just smile a bit more and not garble his lines like a dopey Sly Stallone, maybe I'd have bought the preposterous plot. Maybe if each action sequence didn't look dim, smeary, and uncinematic in that wretched video, I would have accepted the performances as restrained and nuanced. But put these three problems together and you've written some pretty malicious code.
You said that was Jordan Hoffman?
Yes.
Okay, Hoffman, I'm coming for you, man.
Okay. The Globe and Mail's Jeffrey Peavery opined, Mann's new movie seems about as thrilling and current as a first-generation Atari game system, which doesn't even make sense.
No. I mean, these people are, yeah, their metaphors are not even
good. An exercise in sleek redundancy where words like malware are supposed to generate shivers of excruciating anticipation.
Okay. Have you been hacked? Have you had your identity stolen?
Chicago Reader's J.R. Jones wrote, nobody can top Mann's urban night scenes with their oily neon and skyscraper light grids, but for the most part, this plays like Heat without the heat. There's a lot of critical response that sort of in the negative reviews where they're like, I kind of like the Michael Mann-ness of this, but you know who I don't like? Chris Hemsworth, who was kind of fresh off being known, and this is like, oh, this is Thor's first big, like, swing kind of movie.
Yeah, it's just, what, 3 years after Avengers 1. Mm-hmm. So I think that's like who he sort of is in right. people's brains. Yeah.
So to that end, Vulture's David Edelston wrote, Mann's new cybercrime picture Black Hat boasts all his signature themes and curlicues. Brooding nightscapes, heavy synthesizer washes that give way to swift and startling violence. A hero who's an odds-on favorite in God's loneliest man contest. The formula can be intoxicating even in a slack piece of storytelling like Black Hat, which is good enough to make you wish it were better. I found myself urging it forward, trimming scenes in my head, and recasting the lead with almost anyone. On the positive side for Black Hat stands like Jason, the movie did win 2 Hodding Awards, which is a Chinese entertainment award for Best Director and Best Actor. Chris Hemsworth was nominated for Best Movie Actor Drama at the Teen Choice Awards.
Okay.
Which I think is the first Teen Choice Awards mention on this podcast.
And probably the only nomination for Michael Mann. I have to look it up.
Per Wikipedia, it made 8 notable critics' top 10 lists at the end of the year. So there is like a hive of critics that actually really like this movie. It also, shockingly to me at least, tied for 26th on the 2015 year-end Sight and Sound poll, receiving as many votes as Ex Machina, Room, The Lobster, and was ahead of Selma and Birdman.
Yeah, okay, that tracks.
I disagree
well, okay,
with that.
Okay,
yeah.
Maybe not Selma.
And here are some of the positive critical takes. Robbie Collin of the Daily Telegraph gave it 4 out of 5 stars, saying, the whole thing looks like heightened news footage, raw, visceral, and urgent. In a 3 out of 4 star review for Slant, Jesse Cataldo wrote, Black Hat is at its best when no one is speaking in the crisp staging of a hectic chase or the compressed tension of a thudding fistfight, with the director using his camera like a paintbrush, applying a soft focus palette of smeared city lights, streaky movement onto a canvas of deep, inky darkness. And while Roger Ebert had departed us by this time, his spirit lives on in the podcast because one of the best reviews came from RogerEbert.com's Matt Zoller Seitz, who gave Black Hat 3.5 out of 4 stars, writing, you could call this movie Michael Mann's greatest hits and mean it as a slam or a compliment, depending on how you feel about the director. But all the hits have been remixed and rethought. Adding, the movie's climax is a time machine trip, catapulting us from the 21st century to maybe the 18th. It's intimate, emotional, vicious. Flesh is punctured, blood is spilled. As Davis's character puts it, is that tangible enough for you? So, Jason, why is everyone wrong about Black Hat?
Well, I think to my first point, MZS kind of summed it up perfectly. It's if you're a Michael Mann fan, And even if you're not, you should appreciate the quality of this film. But especially if you are already an appreciator of his oeuvre, this is really just everything you could possibly want out of his movies.
Right. It's got all the like beats, as they were saying, like it's like a greatest hits, but it does do all the like sort of Michael Mann things you want out of movies like, you know, a Heat or a Collateral, or as Jason is currently wearing a Heat t-shirt.
Yeah, I mean, visually, it has all the hallmarks. You know, the protagonist is this, you know, super capable person who is very good at a specific thing, and they're very driven, and they live by a code. And the only, you know, they're basically alone in the world, except for, you know, a beautiful woman will show up and then they'll immediately fall in love.
Right. And it does sort of have that like, there's kind of only like one man for the job aspect,
precisely.
you know, like on Manhunter kind of thing. Like it's like, we got to go get, you know, even that one is another jailed person who's going to be helping us out.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, he's also really obsessed with sort of surveillance. You know, you see that in Public Enemies and The Insider. And he's also really fascinated with, you know, the systems of law enforcement and the people who operate outside of it. So Black Hat really ticks all those boxes, which is part of why I was so jazzed walking out of the movie, even though I concede the theatrical version, which is the one that's most widely available for people to watch.
Right. It's also the one I watched
flawed.
It's the one I watched just because... Jason, you also watched the director's cut, and we'll kind of discuss some of those, but I definitely watched the theatrical just because it's like, well, this is the thing that most people have the opinion on, because, you know,
that's
it's
what those critics were
writing.
And
it is
too,
a little
yeah.
bit different even like with a director's cut of something like this, where it's just like director's cut of a deep thing versus maybe like a director's cut, you know, like people are more familiar with the director's cuts of Blade Runner just
sure.
because it's like all these different things where sometimes these good director's cuts of more obscure movies, it's like, well, this actually makes it the movie that it should be, but we have to kind of discuss it in terms of like, yeah, everybody didn't like it because it is this version out there.
Yes, it is quite unique in that way, in that it's such a recent director's cut, so to speak. I mean, it took a few years, but I, you know, and it was this kind of treasure that like I didn't know that we would actually ever get to see it. You know, it played at like once at a retrospective at a theater in New York, and then like aired on FX like twice, and that was it. So it's finally come out on home video as of November of last year. So I've seen it a few times now, and yeah, it is a significantly better movie. But yeah, it's different. It's not, you know, The Godfather Part 3 or Apocalypse Now Redux or, you know,
yeah,
any of the Star Warses. This was a movie where the director took a couple years and was like, yeah, I kind of messed up. Like, let me just like go back to what I meant to do.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have that version.
Yeah.
But I appreciate both.
I guess while we're in this point of the Michael Mann-ness of it all, it might be a good time to discuss, I think, some of the things that are like the challenges that a lot of people have.
Yeah.
Like,
okay.
And then we can sort of talk about that, like how the director's cut might absolve those a little bit. I mean, enough people like weren't interested just to like go to it at all. But it is a movie where I think the hardest thing about it is you don't realize it's sort of like a mystery of like trying to piece it together, but you don't realize who the antagonist is or what their end game is until about like the hour 30 mark. I marked it down. And that's when like a bunch of shit goes down and we may lose some of the characters. And even at that point, you've like lost some of the characters. You're still like, I don't know what they're going after. Like, who is this person? Like, why do they care? And it's sort of like you have to be invested enough to like care. And that's like, you know, normally it's just like, oh, we set up the villain very early in like an action movie and you grow to hate them over time. And this, it's like so distant where it's like, it is like more real and tangible in that sort of way where it's just like, oh yeah, in like real life, if you're chasing down like,
he's a boogeyman.
Yeah,
I don't think the story benefits from introducing him any earlier because the whole idea is he's just this, you know, mysterious interloper, and that is how it is when you're trying to find a hacker. You know, like, you know, he has his enforcers and stuff, and that's where the, you know, obligatory action scenes come from. Yeah, without trying to ruin too much of the movie, the theatrical cut opens with this reactor in China, right?
Yeah, China.
Yeah, being hacked and it causing a meltdown. In the director's cut, that happens halfway through the movie.
Oh.
So the sequence of events involving the hacks actually make a lot more linear sense in the director's cut. And I don't know why it was changed up before the theatrical, but my assumption is maybe the studio was like, we need to start with something a lot sexier than, you know, soy futures being messed with
right.
in the stock market or whatever.
Because, yeah, in the theatrical version, those things happen like both at the same time, basically.
It's yeah.
So, well, actually, like, it's the inverse where it's just like you start with this nuclear meltdown and then...
And then it's like a letdown with the other hacks.
Yeah, and then it's just like, oh, and also the soy futures were hacked. Maybe these are connected. You understand it because it's like a financial like thing, but you're like, it is just a setup narrative issue with this.
Yes. Yeah. In the director's cut, it's an escalation. In the theatrical cut, it's just like, I don't know, a bit of a misshapen mess. And I don't fault people for being very confused by the plot. And it doesn't help, too, that Mann is like a guy who he's very technical and he's really obsessed with accuracy and so forth. So a lot of the dialogue in his films, and this is no exception, if not the apotheosis of it, is that like it's so jargon heavy.
Right.
And this is not like it doesn't come with a glossary.
Yeah.
It's almost like walking into David Lynch's Dune, right?
Yeah.
You're like, okay, I kind of understand what this is, but like somebody please hold my hand a little bit and explain it to me. And I think that's a feature, not a bug, but I can understand why some people were just like, I'm lost.
Yeah, and it's a hacking movie, but it's not like, as we done previously, like the actual movie Hackers, where it's just mm-hmm. like we're trying to make this like cool and sexy and fresh. It's like, no, it's like, we'll talk about this sort of at the next point, but it's like visually good, but it's still like, you know, them just being like, oh yeah, I'm gonna put like this is a back end, like it'll just like say like code things, you know, like coder stuff, and it's just like, okay, if you have like some familiarity, it doesn't like, it's usually not too in depth where like you can't, but especially in 2015 where, you know, there's even less, you know, digital literacy, it is like, yeah, you're just kind of like talking computer terms at me a lot of the time. You're saying them with gruffness.
Yeah, but I prefer that to like, you know, the goofiness of like a Hackers or something.
Right.
Or there's like an infamous panel from a 1990s Batman versus Punisher comic, I want to say, where Robin, this version of Robin, Tim Drake, is like supposed to be a hacker. And he's like, I dropped a nasty box on his Grim Graham or whatever. Like, people didn't know what the fuck they were talking about.
Right.
Back when, like cyberspace, what is it? You know?
Yeah.
And I like that this is just like, no, this is what it's like. And like, sometimes it is just like somebody ran off with a USB key or whatever. Like, the mundanity actually of how nefarious or how easily, you know, these things can happen and are happening is well represented in the film, I think.
Right.
And I don't find that to be a defect at all.
Speaking of the madness of it all, I do think that there's some of the like Michael Mann emotional coldness in mm-hmm. parts of this that maybe is a little harsher to deal with than in some of his other movies. I mean, Hemsworth's performance, we'll sort of get into that. But even just they throw in like very cold questions about like somebody losing somebody on 9/11, and it's just sort of like, why is this in here exactly?
I love that aspect of it, but okay.
I know, but you understand why, like, a casual, somebody who's like, I'm an action movie, would be like, that was kind of weird how we just, like, talked about 9/11 for, like, 5 seconds and then moved on, but it was also still a little more omnipresent back then.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, yeah, that's an interesting shade to that character, and I don't know, maybe we can save it for the junk drawer. And then just in terms of other Michael Mann things, and my man heads will know if and when they've seen it, but like, you know, him staring out a window at a beautifully lit cityscape at night sort of pensively, that's a man thing. Sort of just like his general vibe when he's walking on that airport tarmac. And
yeah.
He's like more or less a free man for the first time. Like that has major man vibes. And just in general, like the way he stages it and shoots it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some of the reviews you cited were complaining about the cinematography. And man, that drives me up a wall. Because.
Well, yeah, I think this goes to our second point that, like, you think this is a visually incredible film.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Great. Let's go do it. So, man, well, he started experimenting with digital when he was making Ali, but it's only in a couple of scenes, and it was mostly because he wanted kind of a verite feel. This is a very new format at the time, you have to remember. And you know, he wanted to experiment with like low light cinematography. And then after that, he makes Collateral, which is his first like 99% digital movie, which he shot on what are now like, you know, fossil versions of digital cameras. So it does have like all this grain and a really weird but unique look.
Yeah, so it's got a very unique grittiness about that.
And then Miami Vice, which I think a lot of people find just like impossible to look at. I dig it. But I think by the time he finally, you know, and he makes Public Enemies in between, but by the time he got to this movie, like, I don't even clock it really as looking that digital. I mean, you could tell it doesn't look like film, but he's kind of figured it out. Like,
right. It just, but
it's,
I mean,
not
it,
distracting.
Yeah, it looks, it's got a distinct look about it. I mean, it is like, if you want something like clean looking, you know, like if you compare it to like Ex Machina, which came out of the same year, it's like, sure, oh, that is like sleek digital looking as opposed to this. It's like trying to have some sort of it's adds like an element of tangibleness to this like cyber movie where it's just
totally
like,
and it's, why shouldn't it look like that, especially if it is like about, you know, the digital space. And you know, honestly, this is making me think of is a movie that I just watched that we were talking about just the other day, Aquaman 2, which is quite clearly shot digitally and looks like a goddamn soap opera. And you know, there's movies like that where it's like, ugh, you went too far into the, I don't know what you want to call that space.
You're basically like you're one step away from just having a CGI, fully CGI.
Yeah, or like movies that they shoot on digital, but they want it to look like film. But what Michael Mann is doing is saying, I'm shooting on digital. You're going to know it's digital, but I'm going to use that as a bonus. It's a quirk. It's not a flaw. It's, you know, it's not a compromise. Like, I'm going to see what I can do that's interesting with this format.
Mm-hmm.
And in general, you know, he's a master of staging and composition and all this stuff and lighting. And it's a good looking movie, man.
Yeah. I mean, like some of the things that stood out, like in the theatrical cut anyway, they start with like, you know, outside the planet and sort of like zooming in. And it's like this web of lights going into where the nuclear power plant is. And like, that's very, you know, good in that version. Like, that's a good like visual introduction. It's like something that looks cool to start you off. They do in the hacking into the power plant. It does do a little bit of like, let's update sort of that feel of like hackers where it's just like, we're in the computer and sort of like dancing around. And
stuff I was
like
about
that.
To say the same thing or about to bring that the same thing, because I think that's the best that has ever been done. And my understanding is that it is like 100% accurate to what that would more or less look like. I mean, I'm sure some creative liberties were taken.
Oh,
but
well,
it's not...
and also just like the speed where it's just like, oh, this is all instantaneous. And we're like, oh, we're like following if you sent a signal and like where it would
go
through.
Yeah. So for the listener, like you basically go inside like a circuit board in a mainframe and you kind of like follow the signal as it travels and all this stuff, and you get way down to like microscopic level. It's very cool looking.
Yeah, it looks much more, as much as it is like this is kind of like digital going into a computer thing. Like in Hackers, like you watch that and you're like,
yeah, it's not Hackers.
This is like people that don't understand what computers are like trying to be like, what is the inside of a computer like? And this one is much more of like, this feels like, again, realism is a weird word to use in that sense, but it is more realistic.
Yeah. I mean, and I love Hackers. I love Johnny Mnemonic and all that. But that's fantasy. And this is like what it really would look like. And it still looks really cool. I mean, he makes all this stuff look really cool. There's one shot. It's really brief. But like Hemsworth is like typing. And there's like a shot from like underneath the keyboard. And it's like see through. And you like see him like pressing the keys. I'm like, that's so cool. Who thinks to do that?
Yeah, there's lots of the scenes where the way that I described it is because it is, you know, there are a bunch of action scenes, which we'll get to, but there is a lot of like well-lit nothing in this movie where it's just like, there's like kind of nothing. We're in like this dingy, like flophouse apartment, like apartment that people are based in. And it's like this fundamentally like looks cool.
Mm-hmm.
It looks grimy, but like grimier than I think some other like Michael Mann, like man stuff. But you know, that's part of like, cause they're sort of like holed up in, you know, it's not Miami Vice where you're, you know, in as many glamorous,
right?
You know,
but
spots.
And yet everyone looks like a freaking rock star.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's a Michael Mann movie. So.
Well, yeah. And then you've collected some very ugly people, you know.
Yeah.
Ugh, gross. Chris Hemsworth.
No.
No. And then another one of the scenes that, you know, probably is worth mentioning and mentioned in the review, but like the finale scene where it is in the sort of slow motion stalking. Hemsworth is stalking the bad guy through this large like festival crowd, and it looks very cool.
I literally have this note from my last rewatch. Great use of slow-mo in the final showdown. Like, yeah, it's just really cool.
Yeah.
And the whole setting, like, yeah, whatever it is, some kind of cultural parade in Jakarta, it's just a really cool set piece.
This actually, again, dovetails into the next point, which is sort of for this hacker movie tied to, like, stock market futures is, like, the core of the movie. And it's got action to it.
Yes. I mean, Michael Mann likes to make action movies.
For sure.
This is true. But he's also very much, you know, this intellectual guy. And I get the impression that he probably read like a New Yorker article or something and was like, oh, this would make a good movie. But I'm not going to be able to sell it unless there's like people shooting guns. And, you know, I don't think it's like a oil and water situation. I think it actually fits pretty well. And the action in the movie is great, in my opinion. There's a couple of shootouts. The one in the sort of concrete, I don't know, what, like underground sort of area.
Yeah, where they're like going to like shipping yards and stuff like that. Where
that's great. And then there's the one halfway through that is amazing and super brutal and shocking. And yes, there will be some casualties in that scene.
That's actually like more than halfway through. That's like three-fourths.
Yeah, I guess
through.
It is three-fourths of the way
it's,
through.
It's
yeah.
like very, it's kind of late in the game. Cause...
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, the dominoes are all falling at that point.
Yeah.
And then the finale is so great. Yeah, not to spoil too much, but like Chris Hemsworth's hacker, a black hat hacker named Hathaway, which, you know, Mommy Made Me a Master of M&M's. That's like my version of that. So. A black hat hacker named Hathaway.
Black hat hacker.
Because it said in the trailer and it was cracking up. Anyway, Hathaway like makes like a DIY action hero kit that's like really cool, which I didn't see coming. And and the violence in the ending is like shocking and great. Yeah, so it's a solid action movie along with being this sort of like intellectual treatise on, you know, privacy and the online world and how vulnerable we are in ways that we probably don't even recognize.
Right. I think one of the things that it does well, like the way that it sets up action, is because it's like, oh, if there's these people making like
so much money,
$1 million, yeah, they probably have like mercenaries and stuff protecting them, and you know, like are dealing with some like pretty shady fucking characters. So that's like, you know, versus like hackers where it's just like, oh, it's another hacker kind of guy. It's just like, oh,
right,
yeah,
or like
there's like potential for, you know, bringing in the FBI and stuff like that, and there's all this potential. Even we didn't even mention there was one scene in a restaurant where there's just like a hand to hand fight with Hemsworth and a bunch of people at this random Chinese restaurant, and sort of like it's the like first one that sort of like comes out of nowhere. You're like, oh, okay, like, because up until that point it's sort of not that much an action movie, and it does seem just like a like straight cyber thriller, and then you're like, oh, there's going to be, okay, it's Michael Mann.
Right, and the movie wisely sets up that Hemsworth is, like, a fighter, in addition to being, like, a genius hacker.
Yeah,
like,
and
he's
the,
been in prison, and
but he's like,
swole.
I gotta train my body and my mind,
yes,
kind of
exactly.
stuff, you know?
Yes.
Like, again,
classic.
Like, classic Michael Mann, lonely, I think somebody said it was, like, trying to win, like, the loneliest man contest. Or,
yeah.
Or,
but, like, no, he's swole and jacked, and he can fuck guys up. And so you're not, like, taken out of the movie when that starts to happen. Oh, I was going to say, like, you know, an even better point of comparison would be, like, in terms of trying to combine the hacking and the action would be, like, something like Swordfish.
Right.
Where it's like that, it just is, that's nonsense, right?
Right.
And here it's like, well, no, yeah, like you said, it makes sense. These people are messing with world governments, they're messing with world markets, you know, they can afford mercenaries, they're gonna want mercenaries. I mean, they've got, you know, Chinese intelligence and the FBI after them, like, yeah, of course. So yeah, the all that action feels very natural as it occurs, and it's very well staged and exciting, and I put in very large letters on my notes, loud.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of mumbling in the movie, so you might be, encouraged to turn it up. But then when the guns start going off, oh boy.
Like, yeah, I think I saw one reviewer be like, it's like, compared to like the rhythmic tap dancing of like a Michael Mann like gun fight scene, where it's just like, oh yeah, there's like a rhythmic quality to the way that he does those, and it does ratchet up. And you're talking about some of the like authenticity, and because I remember looking this up earlier, but he did this movie after he read about Stuxnet, which was a computer worm that targeted one of the Iranian nuclear centrifuges, and then he like hired like actual like hackers, including one guy who apparently hacked into OkCupid in order to like make his profile like the one that is like top presented to like everybody.
That's genius.
I guess, that works. You do you. Loner single guys, Michael Mann, it all works. It's all one Venn diagram.
Yes.
And speaking of that Venn diagram, Chris Hemsworth is in this movie. Yeah, and I think that would be your fourth point, even though it's a point of contention for most. Chris Hemsworth, and sort of despite the large critical assumption, you actually don't think he's miscast in this role.
No, I do not. And that was one of the things I resented most when the reviews started pouring in, is that there seemed to be this sort of, semi-consensus that, like, we cannot believe that this 6-foot everything beefy Australian hunk could be a hacker. And I know Michael Mann has said in interviews, like, well, hey, I did a lot of research for this movie, and like a lot of the guys I talked to who were hackers who are in jail kind of look like that.
Yeah, they're I think it's the thing where everybody's like expecting you to be like, oh, well, you're a dweeby little,
which is a cliche we need to fucking disavow ourselves of.
It's actually a little like anti pretty people bias coming into this.
Yeah, very much.
And I think it's more like, it also made me think a little bit of, because I know there was a lot of the same criticism, but I think it's slightly more valid, of when Denise Richards was the Bond girl. Christmas Jones, who was the nuclear physicist. Just because it seems like in order to be a nuclear physicist, there's like so much more working. Like, you could just be like, I'm kind of like interested in computers, especially when you're in like the ground level, and just be like, okay, I'm kind of diving into this world, where it seems like somebody would have like probably taken Christmas Jones and been like, hey, do you want to come like model in Milan?
Sure.
Before she got all the way through that. But again,
hey, I'm mad about the Christmas Jones thing too, because if you're levying those kinds of expectations at a Bond movie, then you came to the wrong movie.
Yeah.
And this is not a James Bond movie, but I don't think it's unrealistic that like this, smart hacker kid from MIT got busted, went to jail, and what do people do when they're in jail?
A bunch of push-ups.
Yeah. So, okay, I buy that. And he's got this wicked scar on his face. You can tell he's like been through some stuff. Like, I don't know. Like, it doesn't take me out of it. The only thing that really does, and it kind of comes and goes, is he's sort of trying to do a Chicago accent some of the time. And that's obviously a Michael Mann thing, because he's from Chicago. He's got a really thick Chicago accent.
Right.
And he loves to work with his Chicago boys like Dennis Farina and John Ortiz and William Peterson and stuff. He even made Tom Cruise's character in Collateral from Chicago for no reason. No reason at all.
Hey.
And that's kind of the situation here. It's like, this guy didn't need to be from Chicago, but fine. But he kind of drops that most of the way through and just does like a generic kind of growly American thing.
Yeah. And I mean, it's not like I think this
but
is
But it doesn't
like,
bother me.
Yeah. And it's also just like, I don't think Hemsworth is nearly as bad as most people think he is in this, just because it is a like tabula rasa, like sort of blank slate role. But it's just like, oh yeah, you're a cocky prick and like you are minimalist and brooding, and it's like, well, yeah, he's also been in like jail for a bunch of years, and that his social skills are probably somewhat stunted from that.
And reading like Foucault, right, or something like that.
And he also is, and if you're buying that he is a hacker, it's just like, oh, there's an inherent like antisocialness to somebody who just like is computer.
Yeah, which helps justify why like he immediately falls in love with and sleeps with his best friend's sister. Well, he's been in jail a while.
Yeah, I mean, we can talk about that right now. That it ends up being Lane and Hathaway are romantically involved throughout this movie, which at first, like, Because when they first get introduced, it's just like one of those very much where it's just like, are they going to draw this out? Because it seems like they might sort of. And then I'm like, there is no way these people don't hook up on night one, like of being like around each other. And then they like do. And that's like, you know, again, messed up to be like, hey, man, thank you, best friend, for getting me out of jail. The first thing I'm going to do is bed your sister. Like, that's kind of messed up. And, you know, like even the brother finds out about it, he's like, yeah, like you might go back to prison, like don't do this. But also they're like they're so sloppy about hiding it from him, like,
oh yeah,
immediately, and they get like caught. Like, it's just like, maybe just like don't do it while he's like be in bed together to wake up, and then he like comes in and be like, hey, there's a report. Oh
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, good thing things end up well for the brother. What I was going to say is, I mean, ultimately, my last point on Hemsworth and what it kind of boils down to me, and what I'd like to say to those snarky critics face to face, is like, would you have preferred your hacker action movie to star like Michael Cera or something?
Yeah. Or, like, I don't know. Like, or I guess like maybe they're like Cillian Murphy or somebody, or is just like,
okay, I would watch that.
You,
actually,
you would watch that, but that you're Cillian Stan as well. But it's just like that. It's like, did you want just somebody more spindly? Is it just because he's so buff?
Yeah. Or do you want like Josh Gad or something? Like, get over yourselves. Like, it's fine.
Yeah. Like, it is an action movie. These are the type of people that are cast as action movies. He looks good without his shirt on. It's okay.
You know who else was a hacker and was sexy? Neo in The Matrix.
It's true. It's true. Less sexy were the non-Angelina Jolie hackers in Hackers. But
justice for Johnny Lee Miller.
As discussed in the previous podcast, not a fan of Johnny Lee Miller in that movie. He just gets so over.
Matthew Lillard? No?
Matthew Lillard's fine, but he's also like, they're intentionally looking like bizarre and like weirdo.
He's disgusting in that.
So, I mean, Matthew Lillard himself, perfectly fine.
Yes, we stand.
Yeah. Anyway, on to the fifth and final point of defense for Black Hat. And that's sort of about the way that it sort of remains relevant in ways.
Yes. And this is one that I've seen some critics, I want to say Bilge Ibiri and a few others have wisely pointed out, is that, and also I think something that maybe went over some people's heads at the time when it came out, audiences and critics alike, they just sort of like, well, like, I don't get this. How does this affect me? And it's, you know, 2015, and certainly we're aware of things like hacking, identity theft, and meh, 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 meh. But it hadn't really, I mean, this is before, let's just say it, you know, Russia may have majorly fucked with U.S. elections.
Right.
And that didn't seem like a possibility back then. And now it's, you know, dinner table conversation fodder. Like, these things have happened, you know, various nations that I won't name so you don't get in trouble, Seth.
They're coming down on this podcast. I'm
accused of, you know, messing with, say, you know, the electrical grid in the United States and things like that. And there's a whole cyber war happening right now that we, you know, probably know very little of, that's ongoing, and that is, you know, where it's an incredibly dangerous and scary thing. And yeah, I think at the time that wasn't so much in the front of people's brains, and maybe now it is more so, or at least hopefully it is. And this movie is really pointing out, like, it's, you know, one of the first, or maybe, I don't know, along with maybe only a couple other movies of the last 10 years to really intelligently tackle that subject,
right,
and raise awareness and be like, you should be really scared.
And I think people, you know, at the time, it's like almost feels like a too online kind of thing where you're just like, what, like, okay, maybe, yeah, if you're living in this digital space, then sure, but whatever. And it's like, oh, now everybody lives in that digital space.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, I mean, even as small of a thing as like that Chinese restaurant scene is a great example where it's like, all of a sudden, he gets the feeling that they're being watched, and like the security cameras in the back room of the restaurant have been hacked. Like, it's, you really don't even understand. Even today, I just saw a thing when I was scrolling on my timeline, doom scrolling, that X has automatically enabled a feature where they can access your camera and microphone at any time, no matter what. So you as a user have to go in and turn that off. They just turned it on for everyone. And that's terrifying.
Right.
And that sort of stuff is happening all the time now. And it's so easy to take advantage of that if you're, you know, a black hat, which we should say is a term used for a hacker with, I don't know, self-interested aims, I guess you could say, or not a good guy.
Right. It's the Western trope of like black hats versus white hats, until like high noon and everything. That was so like the way that you tell which is the bad guy.
Yes.
Is easy coding.
Classic. Yeah. And so like in a nutshell, the premise of this movie is like they get a black hat to be a white hat.
Mm-hmm.
And just while I'm on that part, a bit of a digression, I suppose. But when I was watching it again this last time, I was thinking about how, oddly enough, I was thinking about the movie Ant-Man and the ways in which the character's introduced as this sort of Robin Hood type crook.
Right.
Like the character in the comics canonically, or this version anyway, is a thief. But they kind of soften it by making it like, oh, well, you know, he stole from bad companies and redistributed the wealth and
right.
that sort of thing. And I'm like, okay, whatever. And then they just pretty much drop that. And then he just becomes like a sweet dad.
Right. And I mean, yeah, the only thing they keep is that like, oh, yeah, he knows like some buddies, you know.
Yes.
Like,
oh, yeah. He's got heist friends. He knows little tricks.
Heist crimes.
Yes. And but this movie, I think, is attempting something similar in regards to like why Hathaway's in jail. And I just buy it more. Like, it seems legit.
Yeah, he basically says something along the lines of like, oh, I was, you know, I was hitting banks. I was not yeah. hitting people. They were fine, whatever. Like, he's kind of just like hand waves. He's just like, I wasn't like hurting people specifically. I was hurting.
Yes, yes. He's like a non-violent version of the bank robbers in Heat or something. Like, he's hitting banks. He knows they're insured. Like, yeah, he wasn't, you know, inflicting economic or physical violence on anyone. And also, it makes sense to me, too, that the government would be like, screw you. We work for the banks, and we're putting your butt in jail.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I mean, but it's not like I'm like, he shouldn't have been. It's like, okay, I get why you're in jail. You know?
Yeah,
like,
I mean, that is breaking the law.
Yes.
But also, I'm kind of on your side.
Right,
with
exactly.
That. Yeah.
It's like, I'm not, it's one of those. I mean, also, just with speaking of, like, the internetness of it, you know, there's the whole thing where he has to, like, hack into, like, the NSA.
Oh, my God,
I
love that
stuff.
Part. Yes, the Black Widow program.
Black Widow thing where it's, like, basically, you know, they get, like, part of a code from, like, the melted nuclear plant, and they're like, well, we don't have enough thing. And he's like, hey, there was not enough things when you guys put me in jail. How did you, like...
And they're like, well, actually,
there's this thing that the NSA has. Yeah.
I love that too, because it's that like kind of that tropey thing where it's she's like, I can't allow you to do this, but
yeah.
if you did,
and it is also like a smart character thing where it's just like, oh yeah, he's like, hey, you guys screwed me over. Like, there has to be like
yeah.
something you're not telling me, because it also sets up that like he's smart enough to think that, but he's also like, you know, was also smart enough. Like, it wasn't just like he got caught because he was like incompetent. It was like,
no,
oh, he got caught because like
he wasn't sloppy. It's like
thing
yeah.
that like he like could have maybe like imagined they had, but like
yes.
didn't know kind of thing.
Which like, yeah, it's also like adds to, yeah, like you're saying, like the sort of the paranoia and just like the, oh my God, like this stuff all probably does exist and that's horrifying. And yeah, that scene is just so fun too. And he's like, everyone leave the room so that you don't have like, you have culpable deniability
yeah.
here.
It's also
I'm going to hack
yeah.
the NSA.
Yeah, it's
and
also
mess with them.
With that, you know, some of the like stock market manipulation stuff. I do feel like also, you know, post like The Big Short, people have like a
Absolutely.
Lot better understanding of like, you know, some of the like these shadier sides of like, yeah, we're just betting on the futures and, you know, beyond like, you know, the people might have only been aware of that from like trading places or something like that.
Oh,
before,
goodness. Yeah.
You
yeah,
know,
yeah,
but
yeah.
it's just like, and even then it's just like, I'm not sure exactly how this works, but I think, you know, with The Big Short and things like that, and just, you know, more news coming out about those types of markets, it's like, oh yeah, people are like more familiar. I think this movie just like straight up would like play better today in terms of like people not being like, this is confusing or I don't know what's happening or anything of like,
and it's
nature.
Fine. I mean, it is still a bit opaque, and that's fine. I'm okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't expect to come out of this movie being like, I understand coding. But that's also not the point. Like, also, you should not know everything, and that is what should scare you. And
right. And I don't think it gets, you know, I don't ever think it's to the point where it's, like, so jargony that I'm not, like, following what's happening.
No, you can follow the plot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not
it's
like you're
a pretty
it's not
straightforward
like you're, like,
movie.
Yeah. None of the hacks they're doing are, like, or anything like that. It's just, like, oh, this is like 8 layers of like complexity that like just like is unattainable. Yes. It's just like, it's just like you're talking about, like the Robin, where you're just like, it's not like there feels like they're just like making up words and throwing them at you.
No, I'm sure it's all real stuff. Right. It's just, it's yeah. Michael Mann's so weird about, he's such a dork with that kind of accuracy and detail and process stuff. He's really into process.
So yeah, I think that like sort of hit on the main points. Is there anything else you want to say before we head into the junk drawer?
Let's get dirty in the junk drawer.
Okay, so hopping in the junk drawer to cover the points that, you know, things about the movie that we didn't hit on yet. I know one you had is sort of, this is a dry run for another role that Viola Davis would later have.
Yeah, and I was double checking to make sure. I think it's just the year before, if I'm not mistaken. But basically, her character in this movie is very much Amanda Waller, which is a character she's played
in The Suicide Squad
three times now,
and Suicide Squad
and Peacemaker.
Peacemaker,
and is maybe going to play again.
Probably.
Very similar kind of hard-ass character. You touched on it briefly, but like, you know, one thing that's interesting about her character that you find out kind of late in the movie is that her husband died in 9/11.
Right.
And this is mentioned only insofar as she's kind of coming up against some resistance from the NSA and stuff, some of the, you know, dorky white guy higher ups, that she might be a little too reactionary or extreme in her methods because she lost somebody in this, you know,
right,
sort of seismic, world changing, you know, yeah, generationally messed up event. But I think that's a really interesting sort of aspect to her character, that she understands the severity of the situation they're in and how, you know, maybe the civilian death toll is lower, but, you know, the ramifications of what's happening in this moment are also huge.
Right. It's also like part of that is like, we need to stop this so that we know how to stop things like this in the future, as opposed
yes,
to like,
yes, that's exactly,
you know,
what it is.
As
yes,
opposed to like, it's
which
not
we
this
didn't do right on 9/11, and we could have done. And yeah, like I was saying, like the new battle front is virtual.
Yep.
So yeah, yes, it's very much beta. It's beta Amanda Waller.
Yeah. And I would also say that, like, you know, it's the cliched thing because it's so many of her roles, but it's just like, oh yeah, like even like bad reviews are like, yeah, but Viola Davis is great and like brings gravitas to this that like it otherwise doesn't have, and like, yeah, kind of can outact anybody on screen, and also has like one of the only like comedic moments in the movie where she's like threatening the like this Gary guy that like is the stock, where he's like, yeah, we're not gonna turn over our like our spreadsheets, and she's like, okay, cool, how about I tell, like, you know, like makes this like blackmail threat basically.
Yeah.
Is that like serious enough for you? You know, just
yes,
like,
yes,
that's the, is that tangible enough for you line, yes, that the, yeah, other critic quote, you know, it's just like, oh, it's nice. Like, there probably could have been a few more like moments of levity throughout this, because it is very like dry and
dour
and
yeah,
dour, where it's just like, and like that one's one that it's not like they're going for, they're just like the gravity of this situation. Like, I'm like fucking serious. Like,
yeah, it feels justified, and yeah, it doesn't feel like somebody came in and did punch up. You know, like this, yeah, wasn't like, yeah, you know, something that Will Forte threw in there on the.
Mm-hmm.
While we're talking quotes, I had a couple that I wrote down because I thought they were so great. And there's a bunch. Well, a couple that are very man-y. Even though he doesn't have a writing credit on the script, I suspect he rewrote a bunch of it. In the Chinese restaurant, Hathaway is talking to Lane, and he says, I do the time. Time doesn't do me. Which I swear to God has been in other man movies, Thief, maybe others. And he says, I have a program. Which is, yeah, again, just sort of the man protagonist in a nutshell. And then he also refers to his time in jail as Gladiator Academy, which is basically, yeah, explains, you know, why, right, he's such a tough guy instead of a little twerp. And then I want to say, maybe Viola says, I can't remember who does it, or is it the bad guy? Sub-symbolic stuff. I mean, that is the most Michael Mann-y thing I could possibly imagine, where it's like both like highfalutin and intellectual, but it also has the word stuff in it.
Yeah.
Like, he's like the smartest man in Chicago. Anyway, I just love that.
I have one that we didn't actually talk about, Tang Wei, who's Lean a lot. Mm-hmm. The female protagonist, for lack of a better term, the romantic interest, who most people, like, if you're like, I turned it on, I'm like, wait, I know this person. Where do I know this person? And that would be a Decision to Leave, if you are a international film purveyor. She's the female lead in that, from that standout film from a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jessup is also the main evil dad in Iron Claw for those people who are like trying to
Holt McCallany. I mean, yeah. Also, you know, co-lead in Mindhunter, and
yeah,
he's been in a bunch of David Fincher stuff and
more
yeah.
recent stuff.
Yes.
If you're
great in the Iron Claw. Yeah. I love seeing Holt show up in anything. Yeah. He's really fun in this, actually. He gets some little comic relief moments as
yeah,
well.
I guess. Yeah. He's lighter, like partially because he's just getting duped by Hathaway, and that's sort of
yes,
like,
so it's amusing. Yeah.
A couple things that like stood out as like sort of like weird moments. And again, maybe this is better in the director's cut when it's at a different spot. Mm. But I think it would probably make so much more sense in the director's cut because of where it's placed. But because in the theatrical cut, like the nuke happens, and then it's like the whole process of like recruiting everybody, and like it's days and days.
Yeah.
When they show up at because the team eventually shows up at the power plant.
Yes.
And there's like a couple things. One, there's like very little like concern. Like everybody's in hazmat suits, and they like immediately are just like walking around yeah. before they get to hazmat suits. It seems yeah. like they, but there's like still people being like treated like outside in like triage tents and stuff like that.
Yes.
Which A, that gives you a reason why you should not be just like walking around in like jeans and a t-shirt. Also, it does not make any sense in the order that it's cut in the original, because you're like, wait, they haven't taken these people to like a hospital or something. Like mm-hmm. they're still just treating them by the side. Like, cause this has to be in the way original cut. This has to be like
at least a couple
week
weeks.
Or,
yeah.
A couple weeks later, and you're still like treating people on site, but yeah. So that's a little odd. And also then when they go in to like retrieve the data from like the meltdown power plant, it's just like, you have 8 minutes or you will die. And then they're like very casual, like they're not like hustling through it.
Yeah, but they're cool. They're Michael Mann characters.
I know,
man.
But it's just like,
they gotta talk slow and wear cool clothes. They're not wearing a hazmat suit.
They do eventually wear the hazmat
suit.
Yes,
true.
But yes, that was a funny one. By far the dumbest moment in this movie mm-hmm. is they get to Hong Kong and they're like, well, we've tracked like these three people seem to be involved somehow. And then they're like clicking through and like, here's this dude's route and here's this dude's route and here's this dude's route. And they have them all on like individual screens where they're like clicking through on a PowerPoint.
Uh-huh.
And they're like, yeah, like we can't figure out. And like Hathaway's like, give me a second. And then he like clicks so that they're all like on
overlapping
top of each other.
Yeah.
And he's like, ah, see, there's this point. It's just like, wait, nobody thought to do these overlap? They're just like, well, if I look at them individually, they don't look like they they're not all walking the exact same path.
I will grant you that.
It's like it's the one movie moment where you're like, dude, I have no hacking skills. I would have been able to solve this.
I mean, that's FBI super tropey, and I'm sure just sort of like one of those things that they had to like make it somehow visually exciting. Although even, I got to say, like the typing scenes in this look cool. Mm-hmm. They could have very easily been boring. And while I'm on visuals, one other little junk drawer note that I had is Michael Mann the king of establishing shots? And like for those who don't know, establishing shots is like, a lot of times in like film grammar, it's like before a scene starts, they'll just do like usually like a helicopter or a drone shot of like a cityscape or whatever to like let you know where you are in time and space, right? And his, like, they never look like second unit. They always look really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was just like, how does he do that? And like a lot, and also like, you know, a lot of other directors, I'm not, you know, knocking them, it's fine, but they'll use like literally like stock footage that you can buy of like Manhattan or whatever,
right.
You know, and just like cut that in there. But yeah, no, all of Mann's stuff seems very deliberate. It's all very in keeping with his style. I mean, obviously he shoots on incredible locations. It's probably why his movies cost so much money.
Yeah.
This movie notoriously is a very, very poorly performing movie financially.
Right. The budget of this is with the international travel and stuff like that, because it's just like, if you just look at it by its, like, if you just look at like the script and we're like, okay, we'll set this in like Los Angeles, and you're like, this is a $70 billion movie. You'd be like, this is not a $70 million movie. But it is like, well, we're going to go to Hong Kong and Jakarta for real and do this stuff.
Yeah, now that I'm just one other thing while I'm on the subject of it being such a flop, like for any listeners out there, the podcast Blank Check, which is my favorite podcast about movies, a lot of people's favorite podcast about movies, they use Black Hat as like a metric for like how bad a movie did. They're like, oh, it made 3 Black Hats. Like, it is that notorious of a flop, which is too bad. And I'm glad it's having like a sort of second life, at least critically, if, you know.
If not, you know, with the mainstream.
Yes, but it should be mainstream is why I'm here today. And the argument that I'm making is that I think it's not only a good film, it's an entertaining film, and in many ways an important film. And I don't think you'd regret putting it on, frankly.
Yeah, and a couple other junk drawer things. The music of this movie, it was a little interesting. Because originally...
Oh, this controversy.
Yeah, it was originally Harry Gregson Williams like composed a score for it, basically.
He's good. He did Wonder Woman and Aquaman and Game of Thrones.
And then it was basically just like, Michael Mann didn't use any of my stuff. He replaced it all with like Atticus Ross stuff.
Yep, from other soundtracks. Yeah.
So, and it does have much more of an Atticus Ross feel than a Gregson Williams feel. So it is.
Kind of notorious for that. Like, he'll use like a temp score and then just keep it in the movie instead of like whomever he hired or whatever. Like,
I mean, it's a little bit of a Kubrickian trait, like all the 2001 things where it's just
totally.
Like, I'm putting this in here and actually I like all this classical music that I just put in to temp track it.
Right, or like The Shining, he did the same thing. Yeah. And yeah, they're similar guys in that they're very finicky and, yeah, who knows? But they make great movies, and go see Ferrari.
Yeah, Jason's a big Ferrari head.
I am, and I was going to say, we were talking earlier about, like, and some of the critics pointed this out, too, like, the violence in this movie is actually, like, quite shocking and visceral.
Especially the one scene we kind of talked
the
about.
The shootout that comes, you know, two-thirds of the way into the movie or whatever. Yeah. And it reminded me, it does feel like he's teeing up for Ferrari, which... Is it not a very violent movie without giving too much away? There was
is the all-time, like, what the fuck is this scene out of nowhere?
Yeah,
kind of,
your jaw will just, like, hit the floor. Like, it's so messed up. But, like, he's really good at that. And I think this is him sort of flexing those muscles as well.
Yeah, I think we talked about some of the things that sort of, I think people had a issue with. Yeah, just, like, structurally, this movie is weird in that, like, it's so withholding. And then it also sort of goes from... Like, it is always a, like, mystery thriller kind of thing. And then, like, the final 30 minutes basically just, like, morphs into, like, a revenge movie.
Yes.
Which, you know, I think it's just, like, structurally, like, again, not that it doesn't, like, work, I don't think, but it's just, like, a structurally, like, very challenging movie for the type of, like, if you're just looking for, like, a Heat style, like, movie you're liking, I just want a Michael Mann action movie. It is, like... Much more challenging than that, or even much more, you know, people who like Fast and Furious aren't gonna be like, yeah, Black Hat.
Right. It's like the person who sued the movie theater over Drive. I remember that. Yeah. No. It's a lot of column A and a lot of column B, and the last 15 minutes are very much column B. If column B is like, you know, straight action, and it's almost kind of like, I don't know, Taken or You Were Never Really Here kind of vibes. It really does become like a full-on like hardcore action movie at the end in a great way.
But yeah, speaking of You Were Never Really Here, that was one where it was just like, I was very upset that Joaquin Phoenix won for Joker, but then it's just like, well, if you want a psychotic Joaquin Phoenix who actually is much more interesting and in a better movie, You Were Never Really Here.
I guess they didn't watch it.
Everyone's wrong about
Joker. New episode.
Yeah, that was kind of I don't know if I'll do a full episode ever on that, but that was that's a
maybe when Folie et Deux comes out, we can.
I don't know. Anyway,
everyone is serious.
Yes.
Why is everyone so wrong?
Yeah. Why so serious? But yeah, I think that is a very solid defense of Black Hat, which I think, you know, is worth checking out if you, you know, like other Michael Mann films, or you like, you know, if you liked Hackers because you listened to that and you're like, oh, I want something that's like a little more serious, but kind of in the same like realm of cyber thrillers. It's like, oh, yeah, this is the more serious adult version of Hackers.
It's better than Disclosure.
It's better than Swordfish.
It's better than Swordfish. Better than The Net.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that this is superior to. So thank you for coming on and, you know, getting through that. Is there anything you would like to plug? I think you would like to plug that Penelope Cruz should have won an Oscar for Ferrari.
At least been nominated. It's outrageous. Yeah, go see Ferrari. Get hyped for the movie Heat 2, currently in production. And if you haven't...
It looked like Austin Butler was doing some gun training
for
that.
Yeah, I saw that today too. Pretty exciting. He's taking over the Val Kilmer role. And read the book. It's phenomenal. If you wanted a sequel to Heat that's like basically structured like The Godfather Part 2, that's what it is. It's like both a prequel about the De Niro character and a sequel about the Kilmer and Pacino characters. And it's phenomenal.
Awesome.
Yeah.
As for my plugs, I will once again be at Treefort Music Festival doing a live version of this podcast down in Boise, Idaho this year. The Live Everyone Is Wrong will take place on Friday, March 22nd at 1 p.m. at the Boise Center East. And I believe it's still free to go to the Podfort section of Treefort and doesn't require you to buy a festival pass or anything. So if you happen to be in Boise and need a lunchtime break or something, come listen to a 45-minute version of the podcast, Guest and Other Things TBA. But yeah, again, thanks for coming on, Jason. And remember, even if everyone else mocks it, love the stuff you love.